Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there. And welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. I'm very excited today because it's someone that I've been following for a long time on social media, on Instagram, and she has given me so much joy with her little hands. That's right, it's the lady with the little hands. She's an author, she's a model, she's a mother of three. It's Louise Bice!
Oh, wow, what an introduction. Thank you.
Honestly, so your little hands that you sent out when the book came out,
yes.
My kids have been looking at them and going, what are they? What on earth are they?
Oh, bless them. Yeah, if you come to my house, I've got hands everywhere.
Do you have multiples now?
Multiples, because my kids will just grab them, lose them, eat them, whatever. Or, you know, when we have play dates, the kids will be like, can I go home with like some hands? It's like, you know, a party bag for play dates. So I just have them on tap.
Do any make, are they any different in terms of like what the hands are doing, or are they all the same gesture?
I have the ones that I have all have the same gesture, but I do have a bag at home which is full of different gestures,
okay,
depending on what kind of content I want to do. And the other day, my sister was like, can I borrow some makeup? And I was like, yeah, it's in my bag over there. And she picked up the wrong bag, opened it up and was like, what the hell is this? This is weird. And I was like, it's the wrong bag, don't worry about it. Her face was just like, yeah, very funny. Yeah.
I saw someone playing with the hands online the other day with cats. So
yes.
People have placed them in front of cats.
Yes.
And it's...
I get sent
you've got
these
competition
videos.
From cats.
I do. And I wish I had a cat for this for this sake. And my mum's got a cat and I'm like, can I just come over and put the hands on? And I might need to do that. But I get sent these videos all the time, every day.
Really?
Like, all the time. You know, did you see the one where there's a man at the barber's and the barber's got the hands on and the guy sitting in the chair doesn't know? I've been sent that one a million times. Yeah, the hands are out there.
What have you created?
I mean, I don't even know. I don't know, but yeah, there you are. And I never thought that I'd be known as the little hands lady. That wasn't really my plan when I joined Instagram. But you just, you know, life takes you in these directions all the time. So who knows?
Well, I mean, at what point did it start becoming funny? Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got this whole other side where, like, all the sketches and stuff that you put together.
Yeah, it started. So the hands, the first time I saw hands was after my third child. And my friend Jenny came round with a card, bottle of Prosecco. And hands. And
pair of extra hands.
Yeah. And obviously my reaction was, that's slightly weird, but thanks. And she said, oh, now that you've got your third baby, you need an extra pair of hands. I was like, oh, okay, fine, that's cool. Put them in my everything drawer in the kitchen and forgot about them.
Never be seen again.
Never be seen again. And then COVID hit and my content changed from being, you know, out and about on a modelling shoot, whatever, to then obviously being stuck at home with kids, with your husband, all going a bit kind of loopy. And I kind of turned my content into humour and I didn't think that I could do that, which was weird. And I guess we were all in a place where we were like, well, there's nothing else to do. And everyone needed to laugh. And so I just started making content. And then one day my middle child came up to me in the kitchen and I was on my laptop trying to work. And he did the classic, you know, mummy watch, mummy watch, for the millionth time that day. And I was like, okay, looked at him, and then he did this kind of like really like ridiculous, like nothing, like hop on one leg, and it was like, ta-da. And then I, you know, irritating, but also funny.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I was like, well, can you do that again? And I'll film you and, you know, it'd be funny. And then, of course, he was like, no. And so I kind of played with the idea in my head for a while. And then I thought, I really want to create this. How can I do this myself? Remembered the hands, filmed this sketch with me with the hands and sent it to my mum before I put it online. I was like, do you get it? She's like, I don't get it. Yeah. She's like, I don't get it. She's like, I don't know who you're supposed to be. I was like, okay, that's weird. You're a mum of three and a single mother and started her own business. Like, of all people, you should get it. And she didn't get it. So then I thought, all right, I won't do anything with it. Sat on it for 2 weeks, did nothing with it. And then I sent it to my best friend who had two children, young children. She was also working from home. Sent it to her and she was like, I really needed to see that today. And it's funny. She was like, put it out there. And I was like, okay. So I did. And then I guess the rest is history. I never thought it would become what it's become.
There's something really charming and lovely about the fact that it's all you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not, I think it would sit differently if it was your kids in it.
Yeah.
And actually, I think it's turned into a very clever thing.
Yeah.
Because it's observation based. You know what I mean? And you're not relying on them or, I don't know, it almost sometimes can feel like you're getting them to do certain things by you know, which totally can be fun if they want to get involved. But there's no, like, you know, having
there's
to go,
no pressure.
Film this and I'll give you chocolate buttons.
Yeah,
none of that.
Yeah, there's none
it's
of that.
It's just kind of, it's just you making observations and going, I'll make a little thing out
and
of
it. And also it means I can shoot whatever I want, you know, when the kids are at school and stuff. Yeah. And there is, it's, and you're right, like watching what they do and then kind of putting it in my videos, I find fascinating because they have all these, I don't know, these quirks and these personalities that then I really enjoy playing and I really enjoy Weirdy. I play my husband and my mum in some sketches as well, and I really enjoy it.
And what do they think of it?
Well, my mum's very much like, I'm not like that. And I'm like, well, you kind of are, actually. And then my husband's, he finds it funny. And I, you know, I do show him the videos before I put them out because I don't want him to feel, you know, threatened or under fire or anything. Because he's a good man. But obviously, you know, he does the standard, spends too much time on the loo, for example. And I wanted to kind of get that across. And his character's now just evolved into just grunting, which obviously he doesn't do. But sometimes, and I do. I mean, if you could see like behind the scenes of me making these sketches at home, I'm just laughing all the time to myself. And then I'm like, what on earth am I doing? I mean, what's going on? But, you know, whatever. It works.
I love it. Well, let's go back to your childhood. So you're one of three. Where do you sit in that?
I'm the middle child.
Oh, gosh, same.
Yeah, I've totally got middle child syndrome. It's big online. Yep. I've got an older sister and a younger brother, and we're all very, very close.
Are you close in age as well?
My sister and I are 2 years apart, and me and my brother are 4 years apart.
Okay.
So I do feel like the older you get, the smaller the age gap is. And we're all very close. We've all got silly senses of humour. It's like when we're together, it's just constant banter and, you know, I love it.
Where did you grow up?
In East Sheen.
East Sheen.
So we were there and, And then I moved to Clapham and I decided to move out, which was great. And now I'm in Farnham.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's all right, actually. I never thought I'd leave London, but I love it. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Happy childhood?
Oh, deep. Yes and no. My dad left when I was 4. And actually, do you know what? The way that he left is really quite awful. Mm. And I don't think I've ever spoken about this before, but it was my sister's birthday party. It was her 6th birthday party. And so mum was at home doing the birthday party. You know what it's like, kids, parents around, cake, there's noise, everything. And mum was like, where's your father? And he arrived at the birthday party and told my mum, I'm leaving. And his girlfriend was in the car waiting outside. So I don't...
I'm guessing with the age, your brother would have been
my brother was
baby.
A baby. He was still in nappies. And obviously my mum was just like, we're about to cut the cake.
Yeah.
You know, like complete and utter disbelief, like what's happening. I mean, she knew that there was an affair going on and she was trying to make it work. And So yeah, so he left.
And how aware of you were you of that?
It's interesting actually, because I don't remember. I remember this day, but I only have memories. Like, I remember the music that was being played, and I remember the room. I remember that party more than any other birthday party as a child, obviously for good reason. I mean, I'm sure there's things buried away that I can't even remember or have just decided to block. But even though that happened, I've got to say, like, this is why my mum for me is such an inspiration, because she never showed the three of us that she was hurting. She never bad-mouthed my father until we were adults. But she never showed her suffering. She made everything fun. Mm-hmm. And we had no money. You know, after my dad left, he didn't support us. And, you know, it was in the day where, you know, there was no internet or social media. And for a woman with three kids to try and get work, very, very tricky. But she did it. She studied accountancy at night, and she became an accountant, and she nailed it. Mm-hmm. And I've got so much respect for her for doing that. And she always carried herself with such grace and class that and she still does, that I just really respect that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of her determination, a lot of the way that she worked really hard, has kind of instilled in me and my brother and my sister. We all have our own companies. We all work really hard. And, you know, I speak to my mum every day, every day. And she's like become my best friend. And we talk, you know, a lot about, especially now that I'm a mother, the fact that she did it alone. And also, it was a time where I don't think women really talked as much as we do now. There wasn't the same community. And the fact that she did it and held her head up high and nailed it. Like, she's the original mum, still got it. 100%. Oh. Yeah, she's amazing.
It is definitely one of those things. I think it's only when you go through it and have kids yourself, you realise the magnitude of what that person has gone through and what they did.
Yeah. And I remember, like, there were parts of my childhood where I remember feeling like, you know, all my friends have, you know, better cars or better houses or better clothes, especially when you kind of grow up as a teenager.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like, oh, this isn't fair. But then again, my mum, instead of she could have put like a negative spin on it and been like, well, your father left and I've done la la la. She could have been that. And she was like, well, you know, let's build towards that. What can we do? You know, let's make it fun. And she always made everything so fun and just it like possible.
Yeah.
And again, I just really respect
that. Which is a massive talent, because I think, like, if I think about the stuff that I've got and the juggling, the fun is often the thing that I forget about.
Yeah.
Because you're just trying to get through, muddle through, get the homework done, get that done. And you forget about that's part of being a mother that we all were looking forward to. But actually, when you're in it, it seems like that's just a faraway, abstract thing.
Totally. You've got to be really focused, I think, and really patient and just know exactly what to do. And she did have the support of her father. So my grandfather was a big role in my life. He was great. And he lived nearby. So I think that was her rock as well, which is great. And she did have, you know, she did have friends around her. I remember she's got a story where one of her friends kept saying to her, let's go out, let's go for a glass of wine. And she kept saying, I can't afford the babysitter. And that was always my mum's excuse. And then one day the friend turned up at the front door, just walked in, slammed down a £10 note on the kitchen counter and walked out. And she went, next time I ask you out, that's the money for the babysitter. And that was it. And they're still friends now. Like, they're still like, you know, a friend that she met, you know, when I was at school, like a school gate mum, and they're still friends now. In fact, I think she's having lunch with her today, randomly. And that was lovely, I think, as well. So she did have people around her.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think she was very... Just weird, though, because she said the other day, she was like, you know, I'd do it all over again.
Oh.
And I was like, would you really, mum? Like, would you really? Like, I know how hard it was. And then she's like, maybe not some of it. But she goes, but I would. You know, she sees me with my kids and how sometimes I'm like, oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And she's like, Louise, it's fine, it's going to go. Just enjoy it. And I'm like, I know I am enjoying it, but you can't, you know, there are times where you don't enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. But then, yeah, she does remind me. But then she also likes to pull out a babysitting quite often as well.
Like, these right, grandparents with yeah. their busy schedules. How
I
dare
know.
They?
I know.
How dare they?
They?
Did you continue a relationship with your dad? Or once he left it?
Yeah. Yes, but... our relationship, I guess he was more like an uncle,
yeah.
like uncle dad. And he was, we saw him for a few hours every other Saturday. And then he would just buy us a jumper or something. So that was it, really.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we were old enough, because he was a musician. It wasn't until he was old enough, we were old enough that we could see him playing gigs. And then our relationship became kind of more social.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when we did grow up and kind of had our children ourselves, he did apologise. He did say I messed up. Because he married the lady that he left my mum for. They split up 6 months later and then he tried to come back to my mum and my mum was like, absolutely no way. But he died... 4 years ago, I was pregnant with Inca. So yeah, he died about 4 years ago. And yeah, I kind of feel like we had almost made peace.
Yeah.
Which was really nice.
Yeah.
Actually, even with my mom, they met up for the first time in years. And that was really nice.
Yeah.
That was really nice. I kind of hope that he felt that he got that peace because I kind of felt like he was carrying it. Not that I'm making excuses for him because he did was awful.
No, but people do shitty things. They do. They simply do. People do make massive mistakes and you can't undo them. Do you know what I mean? But I think having that apology and that sorry for you.
Yeah. And, you know, it was nice that he did that. And, so I guess we did, you know, he gave me away at my wedding, but he didn't do the speech. My mom did the speech.
Right.
And she nailed it. I mean, she got standing ovation.
Did she?
It was amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And then, you know, my dad left the wedding because he was like, well, that's not fair. And I was like, what? You keep leaving. Stop leaving.
So when you were younger, obviously you had this big modelling life, which it sounds very fun in terms of like travelling the world. Mm. But obviously it came with lots of troubles in terms of bulimia and stuff like that. And there was one point while you were in Australia where a doctor said to you that it was affecting your fertility.
Yeah, yes. I was bulimic and honestly thought it was a great idea. You know, I can eat and then still be thin because I throw it all up. And it got to a point where I was told that I wouldn't be able to have children. But I was 18 and I didn't care.
Did it just seem like a faraway concept that wasn't even...
I didn't care. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is great. I'm not getting periods. This must mean that I'm thin enough. It's ridiculous to even say it out loud, but that was how I was thinking as an 18-year-old.
And also, you were a model at the height of the like heroin chic. Everyone was all about.
It was about
those bones.
I mean, you know, to have a trend that has the word heroin in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Uh-huh. And again, it was before social media, so you couldn't even air it to anyone. You couldn't talk. No one listened. No one cared. And, you know, I wasn't alone. There were loads of girls that I was working with that had eating disorders. Mm. It was almost like...
The norm,
which is awful.
And that's the women that you're surrounded by. And the people that don't have those eating disorders are the people that are, you know, measuring your thighs and telling you that they're too big.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I remember going for lunch with a few models and looking back now, like if it happened now, you'd be like, what on earth is going on? There was one girl who got her food and she poured so much salt over her whole plate just so she wouldn't overeat. Like it's crazy. And then there'd be another girl that would like wolf everything down and then go to the loo. Like it was, but I was so caught up in it.
Mm. They became things probably that are more like, well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a clever idea.
I was like, that's brilliant. I'm going to do that one because I'm living at home with my mum, which means she can see me eat and then I'm going to go throw it up. Brilliant. Honestly, I was like, this is the way forward. And then, being told I couldn't have children, Yeah, as I said, I was
18. Because you stayed out in Australia for another 6 months after that.
There,
so it wasn't like it was something like, oh, this is actually going to affect my health.
No, all I cared about was, am I thin enough?
Yeah.
That's all I cared about. My whole way of thinking was consumed with, am I thin enough? How much do I weigh? What's the number around the measuring tape? That was my focus. That was it.
When you left the modelling industry and you were, you know, living a more normal life that was away from how you looked, although I still think we lived in a time that's so focused, you know, in
the noughties,
it was absolutely, you know, so-and-so's too thin, so-and-so's too fat, on the beach, whatever. I think that was such a massive part of the narrative.
Yeah.
Was there any point within that your attention turned back to your future and if you wanted to be a mum and your fertility?
No, I honestly was never, it was never really on my agenda.
Wasn't it?
I was never that girl at school that was like, when I get married or when I have kids. It wasn't on my agenda until I met my now husband. Something clicked and I was like, oh, my ovaries just twitched. but no, it wasn't. And you're right, there was still so much noise around weight in the early noughties. But I think, you know, I was still slim. I was still slim. And, you know, looking back, all those magazines, they were so toxic.
Yeah.
You know, all the, like, you know, Her Body Beach and, like, Horrendous Beach, and, like, front page. And it was so, so damaging. And, you know, magazines have got a little bit better, but now we've got it online instead.
I know, it's so hard, isn't it? I was thinking about this, actually, because, you know, with things that are online, they are so doctored now. There are people that are putting so many filters on stuff that's going out there. And I know that, you know, images in magazines before would have been edited and that they now have to disclose what those edits are.
Mm.
But online, there's none of that. Like, is it at least before it still looked like a body that was obtainable? Whereas now people are aspiring to be something that he literally cannot be.
It doesn't exist. Yeah, I know. And a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. Was there a point where you suddenly thought, maybe kids is the thing?
Yeah. So when I met Jesse, I was 28. And I remember being on holiday. And it was our first holiday. We went to India. We went with, I mean, this is like so, like, being young. We went to India on holiday. I think there were 30 of us that went. We were all, obviously, didn't have children. I don't even think any of us were married. And we just all decided to go. And, like, everyone kept joining. I'll come. So we're in India. And I was talking to a girl. And she was saying, when do you think you want to have kids?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't know, maybe 32, 33. I don't know. And I didn't realise that Jesse was listening to the conversation. And then later on that evening, he went, by the way, that's fine with me. And I was like, sorry, what? And he was like, having kids at 32. And I was like, oh, okay, that's quite nice.
Yeah.
And that was that, really. Like, it was just, and then, I don't know, I just kind of knew that he was going to be the guy for me. I just knew it. And I think, he knew it too. And then,
I imagine there's not a nice thing if you've kind of gone, well, that's the age and it's far enough away. Mm. Do you know what I mean? But we know we're committed to each other. Mm. We know that's where we're both going, but it's not now.
Yeah.
So we don't need to worry about it. But it's quite nice. It makes you feel settled in the way that there's a plan.
There's a plan.
Life doesn't always follow plans. It simply doesn't.
There's a plan.
But there's a plan.
Yes. And I was happy with that plan. And that plan did happen. It actually happened earlier than we wanted it to happen, but it did happen, and it was marvellous, and he's now 11.
Can you remember finding out you were pregnant?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, I did pregnancy tests, and they all said negative. I did 3 pregnancy tests, and they were all negative.
What were your symptoms? Were you just late?
I felt sick.
Right.
My boobs were going mental. I had no period. Really tired. All the symptoms.
Yeah.
And the pregnancy tests, I think it's weird. I think I must have bought like a dud packet or something because all of them said negative. And then I got really bad cystitis. And so I went to the doctors for it. And when I was at the doctors, I said, I've got all these symptoms. My period's late. I said, but I'm not pregnant. Like, can you just do a urine sample, see if there's an infection or something?
Yeah.
And so we did a... He basically put the thing in my urine in front of me and literally was like, yeah, you're pregnant. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And so this doctor told me I was pregnant and that was my
really
reaction.
Casual
I was just
way.
Really casual. And I was like, you what? And I was so, I was in such shock that I, weirdly, just took all my clothes off. And I was just there. I just got so hot. Like, I was inside. I took all my clothes off.
How much, like, what were you left in?
I had very disgusting underwear on.
You literally took all your clothes off, down to your underwear?
Yeah. I was standing. It was shock. And he was just, like, not even looking at me.
I love that that was your reaction. I just need to get out of
yeah.
this.
Yeah. It's like, I had to take my everything off. And he was like, do you want to lie down? I was like, yes. So then I was lying down in my underwear, just breathing, and he really was not helpful at all. And yeah, he did say, he was like, there are options. And I was like, no, there's not options for me, not right now. And went home and told Jesse, and you know, he was delighted, so that was great. And yeah, now he's this, you know, this child's now 11 and calling me bra.
Are you saying that back though? Are you going, all right, brah, come on?
I do. And then he's like, oh, that's really embarrassing. And I'm like, well, you know, I can't win. Everything's embarrassing. I'm trying to keep up. He said another word the other day. He said, I mean, there's so many new words that are coming out that I just don't even know. But he said something was bet, which basically means good.
Right.
Maybe. I might have got that wrong. And then there's another word, broken. Broken means happy, apparently.
I am so broken.
I'm so broken right now, brah. Like,
God, how are kids meant to talk about their mental health when this is all
no
such a
idea.
Confusing...
I have no idea. I'm like, how is broken something good? It's like, it's broken.
I guess it's like when sick became sick. Like,
yeah,
sick.
Or like when bad became good. Like, that's bad. Like, which now makes sense. Like, I get that. But like, broken, that's broken.
It's maybe
so
it's all
strange.
About the inflection and the expression on your face, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. But yeah, and I do try and keep up. And then he is a bit like, he's like, bro, you're embarrassing. And I'm like, bro. He's like, don't call me bro. And then we kind of go in the circle of bro and bra and broken. And I'm like, this is strange.
How was the first pregnancy?
Oh, well, when I actually realised I was pregnant.
How far along were you when you found out?
9 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was 9 weeks. I loved all my pregnancies. Yeah. I loved them all. I mean, yes, they made me feel sick and all sorts, but I loved them. You know, it's so miraculous. It's such a gift.
Yeah.
And I loved my bump.
Yeah. How did you feel about your body changing? Because obviously having had the history that you had, was that...
I found it really healing, actually.
Really?
Because I was then so grateful that my body could make children. Mm-hmm. And I was so grateful, and it is miraculous.
Yeah.
When I found out I was pregnant, I downloaded that app. Is it Baby Center, where it tells you week by week what's happening inside you, and like videos of the fetus growing, and it is honestly miraculous.
Yeah.
And it really gave me more of a respect for my body, and I loved seeing that. I loved seeing my bump grow. I loved seeing my boobs grow. I loved it all.
Mm.
Even when the babies were born, and obviously you kind of get that, you know, I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah, I loved it.
Because I always feel like the pregnant body is admired and respected and loved, and then when the baby's out,
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, speculation. When are you going to lose your baby weight? You know, when do you want to get back to the gym? There's all of that. But for me, because I realised what I put myself through and how much abuse I'd given myself, I then wanted to almost make up for that and really look after myself and protect myself. And so I kind of muted all the outside noise and just enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my tummy's still not perfectly flat. And I don't care.
No.
I don't care. It's made three people. It's incredible.
But what you know, I think if we go back to those magazine covers that there used to be, you know, when it came to people giving birth, it was that snapback. I only gained 6 pounds in pregnancy.
Oh,
how?
God.
It was of that. The focus was always on the weight.
I know.
And I think it's actually so refreshing now to have people talking online about their bodies, seeing that people don't snap back, seeing journeys and stuff.
It's
absolutely normal.
And also, I think I read somewhere that it takes about a year for your body to kind of almost heal and get back to maybe what it was. But, you know, I've got friends who after giving birth, you know, 4 weeks later, I've got to get to the gym, I've got to get back. Mm. I'm like, Like, you don't. Relax.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, just crack on, enjoy. It's, yeah. You look great.
Well, also, you can see what other people are doing and it makes you go, oh, gosh, they've yeah. just had a baby and they're out walking. Maybe I should go for a walk or maybe yeah. I should do that.
Well, that's the thing, again, with social media. As much as it's great in some respects, there's a lot of comparison.
Yeah.
We're seeing into people's lives. We're the first generation of mums, people, to be on social media. So mm-hmm. we are seeing more than we would ever see before.
Yeah.
And it is easy to compare. I mean, yeah. it really is. We've all done it.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I went for a walk far too soon after one. Thought my insides were going to come out. So I was like, I better go home. Well, better keep them in.
Well, that's it. You know, my midwife, when we had our first, I had an independent midwife. And her rules, her strict rules to me were the first week after giving birth, you don't get out of bed. And the second week, I want you to go from the bed to the living room and that's it. Did I stick to those rules? Of course I didn't, because I was like, I've had a baby. This is great. I want to go out and I, you know, I want to see people. And then I should have listened to her rules, because I actually hit a wall because I was overdoing it. I was trying to make out that I could still be this person and I'm still capable of everything and everything's great. And I did hit a wall.
Yeah.
And I should have listened. And so whenever my friends are pregnant with their first, I'm like, just take it easy. You don't need to be this superhero immediately. You are a superhero, but you need to look after yourself.
Yeah.
Like, we have to heal. And exactly what you said, happy mum, happy baby. Mm-hmm. It goes down to looking after yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But also, you get into motherhood at the most depleted. You know, you've gone through this massive, however the baby's come out, it's a massive, massive thing.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've got a little one who relies on you for everything when you're not at your best.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, it's self-care when you're a first, you know, as you said, just giving birth. Oh, my God, it's so important. Yeah. It's so, so important. Ask for the help. Stay in bed.
Yeah.
You know, with my second, I knew what to expect. And I remember really embracing, you know, when your milk comes in and you're going to get like all the extra hormones and the baby blues. And I remember saying to my husband, I was like, right, today's the day. I'm going to be crying a lot. I was like, set up the movies, get the tissues. And he put on like movies that I knew I was going to cry to.
Yeah.
And I literally spent like 24 hours sobbing.
I love and this leaning into it. Yeah, I was just like, going, why?
No, I was like, this is the day, let's do it. I'm going to enjoy this. And with my third as well, I was like, I'm all for this. And I remember Jesse would come up to me every now and then whilst I'm sobbing. He was like, is everything, are you all right? And I'm like, I'm fine. it's fine, it's normal. And he's like, all right, fine. And again, it's part of the healing process, you know? And I really was like, let's just do it. Let's do this. And I loved it.
Yeah. I wonder how many people try and fight against that. And then just
I'm sure lots. Or maybe people don't think it's normal, but it is. It's so normal. It's part of the process. It's the hormones.
I like this idea, though, of having a day three.
Oh, yeah, I made it an event.
Movie day.
Yeah, it was an event. Yeah, I loved it.
I want this to be a thing.
Yeah, bring it on. Let's have groups of people doing it together.
Yes.
Just cry together. Get it out. Yeah.
How did you feel heading towards your births?
Actually, I must say, I really prepared myself. I did lots of hypnobirthing.
Which, again, 11 years ago, there wouldn't have been as much noise about hypnobirthing as there is now.
No. And with my first, I gave birth at home with no drugs, which is crazy. But I did, because I actually had a fear of hospitals. That was my reason behind it. Not because I wanted to be like, I don't know, whatever, but I had a huge fear of hospitals. And so I knew that I wanted to give birth at home. And I practiced that. I put my mind in the right place and I did manage to do it. And it was lovely and frightening all at the same time. With my second, I did end up in hospital because I think I was 2 days overdue, because my due date was my birthday. I was 2 days overdue and my eldest son, who by the time he was three, he jumped on my tummy. I was lying down and he jumped on me. And that made me just start to hemorrhage.
Right.
Awfully. Something.
God, that must have been terrifying for you and
terrifying.
Him. You know, that must have been a
terrifying. Because I was planning to have another home birth.
Right.
And then the blood, it was like I'd been shot. Yeah, it was. And my midwife, because I had the same midwife, because she was very calm and spiritual and holistic, I called her and she was like, calling the ambulance immediately. So then that made me panic.
Yeah.
And so that one I did end up in hospital, and that was quite the traumatic birth. They burst my waters, and after they burst my waters, 40 minutes later, because I remember calling my mum and being like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm in hospital, just so you know, I'm scared, but I'm here. Put the phone down, they burst my waters, and then 40 minutes later, Sunny was born and my placenta was born. Like, it was so, so horribly quick. And I know that might sound great, 40 minutes done. It was awful.
Mm-hmm.
It was so traumatizing for both me and Jesse.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you know, I was still hemorrhaging. So then I had to stay at going intensive care. And, you know, and I remember saying to them, I remember they gave me Sunny, it was on my chest, and they pushed a button, loads of people came running in and they were doing something. And I remember being so high on gas and air that I remember saying to them, just leave me alone. I've just had a baby, leave me alone. And this woman, who was obviously down right in my vagina, just kind of looked up at me and she went, we're saving your life. And I was like, okay, carry on. That's fine.
Well, you get the baby in your chest and you just think that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and you've done.
Yeah. And they gave me him. They wanted to rush him off. He was fine. They were worried about me, but they wanted, Jesse had him. And then my independent midwife, who was with me, but she's not insured to work in the hospital.
Yeah.
She said, Jesse, give Louise the baby so she could focus on something.
Yeah.
So then I had Sunny on me and it did calm me down. And then they were like, we're saving your life. And I was like, continue. That's fine. So after Sunny, I was like, I'm not having another one. That was too scary.
How long were you in hospital for?
3 days. God. Yeah. And I've got to say, the NHS were absolutely incredible. They were absolutely incredible. You know, they did save my life. And then when we planned to have a third, because of my history with that pregnancy, that labour, I had to go into hospital. So
how long and did it take you to go from I'm not having another child to we would like another?
I think it was about a year.
Because that's a lot to work through.
Yeah. And I think I should have probably had some therapy or something to kind of handle what happened. Because then when I was at home and back to normal life, I did kind of like think about what happened and what could have been if the NHS weren't around, or, you know, if this happened 100 years ago, I would be dead.
Yeah.
Like lots of other women. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was about a year that Jesse and I were like, let's go again. Because Sonny was such a good baby. He was so easy. We're like, we've nailed this. Parenting's easy. Let's have another one. Well, we went for another one and not so easy. But the labour with her, because I knew I was going into hospital, and because I knew what it was before, I really then focused even heavily, even more than the first, on hypnobirthing and getting my mind in that place. And I've got to say, the labour with my third was so powerful. Like, I loved it. I know that's a really
weird
thing to say.
Was it healing?
It was healing. It was really healing. And I just did it all on my own terms. Mm-hmm. And when I was giving birth, I had my headphones in and I was listening to my hypnobirthing whilst I was pushing. I literally blocked Jesse out. I blocked the midwife out. I literally was like, it was so animalistic.
Yeah.
It was so powerful. And it sounds really bizarre, but I just really enjoyed that labor. And, It was very, very healing. And poor Jesse afterwards was like, you didn't include me at all. And I was like, well, there's not much you can do. I've learnt that from the other two.
By the
like
third,
rubbing
Tom
my back,
get me. Off.
Like, yeah. Or like just doing something really like not helpful. Like I remember like stroking my hair. I was like, get off.
I don't
want you to stroke me. So with my third, I was just like plugged myself in, listened to the hypnobirthing. And part of the hypnobirthing, a part of what I've practiced was, when you're in between contractions, smile, which is not what you'd think to do.
Yeah.
And also don't hold on to things, don't grasp things, because actually tightening your fists can tighten your cervix.
Right.
So I was like, after each contraction, I was just smiling away and Jess was looking at me going, what are you listening to? But it was wonderful. And yes, it was very healing.
Oh, So amazing.
Yeah. And I'd do it again. No, I wouldn't actually. No, I wouldn't.
That was so
take that
quick.
Back. Yeah.
That was
no.
so quick.
No.
No.
Just
that you realised what you'd said about no, actually.
No, forget that. No.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Can you remember the older kids meeting, you know, so Basil meeting Sunny and Sunny meeting, you know, them all meeting each other?
Yes, I was given some good advice, actually. I was told that when your children meet the new baby, to not hold the baby, make sure that the baby's in the bassinet or something. So yes, I've got a video of my eldest meeting the middle one, and he's wanted to call him Zaha after the Crystal Palace footballer, which my husband was thrilled with because he's a Crystal Palace fan. But then we're like, no, his name's Sonny. And then he said, I took the picture of Basil holding Sonny, and then Basil was a bit like, when's he going back to the hospital? And we were like, no, he's here for life. And he was a bit like, oh, all right. And then when the boys met Inka for the first time, again, she was just in her Moses basket, and they adored her straight away.
Really?
They couldn't remember her name, though. Sonny kept calling her Frankie, which I quite liked, actually. I was like, her name's Inka. And he was like, but it's Frankie. They adored her straight away. And they still do. In fact, they adore her, and she's the one that's like, don't even look at me, don't even touch me,
really?
Don't talk to me. Yeah, she's a character. I mean, she's the cat. She's basically the Hands character. She's a bit bonkers.
How old is she now?
4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is she in reception?
Yes.
So you've got all three.
All three at school. Marvelous. Marvelous. It's great. It's great. It does. It's a new lease of life.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of have them all there.
Yeah.
You know, chatting to you here, I know they're all at school, it's great, and I will get back in time for pickup. It's
almost
wonderful.
That guilt-free thing, I think, once,
yes,
they're there.
It is, it's guilt-free, and it's lovely, and especially after paying nursery fees, which are so expensive, you know, after you kind of feel like, right, that's great. I paid nursery fees for a decade.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now there's none of that, and it feels like a new lease of life. It is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was your recovery after each birth?
Sunny, the middle one, was the hardest because I lost a lot of blood and I was on a lot of medication. But generally fine. Fine. I think when you have a baby and you've got two older ones, you just have to get on with it.
Yeah.
Because you can't be as, you know, when I remember with Basil, didn't have other children to look after. Mm. So you could just really enjoy that. But, you know, I remember breastfeeding Sonny, and then Basil was in the garden, and then he was like calling out to me, and he was just standing, just pooing. Just because we were like potty training, he was just pooing. And like, I was like,
there's
right.
Nothing
so I just,
you
yeah.
can do.
So I put Sonny down. And then he started screaming because he obviously was just about to get fed and then wasn't. And I had to run to Basil to kind of like sort his poo out. And and I do think as well, my youngest slept through the night a lot quicker than the other two, because when she was crying, I'd be sorting out the other two.
And I'd be
like, I'll get there in a minute, get there in a minute. And by the time I'm there, she's asleep. And I'm like, oh, right. Well, that was easy.
But it's hard. I think when it's your first, you are just there straight away.
With the first, like the slightest murmur and I'd be in there.
Yeah.
And of course, he didn't sleep through till he was three. Yeah. Like three. Yeah.
Those nights. The sleep.
Oh, my God. I know. And it's weird because I would do it all over again. I sound like my mum now. I would do it all over again. But when you're in it, you're like, I just want to sleep.
It feels never ending. Like my sister-in-law's going through at the moment, so it makes me remember that, you know, Buzz only used to take an hour and a half to feed, to win, to get him back to sleep, and then it'd be up an hour and a half later, and that you know, constant, and you feel like it feels like that's your new life.
Yes, I very much remember when my firstborn was 3 months old. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, this is now my life. This is it. This sucks.
Yeah.
Like, this is really hard.
Yeah.
And, like, this is now my life. But actually what you don't realise is that it changes all the time, and it does get easier, and you do get your sleep back, and you do get your independence back, and they do come back. And it's weird because I'd love to cuddle my eldest now as a three-month-old, and, you know, I'd love that.
Yeah.
But at the time, you just think there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but there is.
Yeah.
There really is. Anyone listening to this who's in it right now, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
You will be sleeping
again.
You will. My massive shift was when they could pour themselves cereal.
Oh, my God.
So on a Saturday and Sunday morning, when they can go down and do that,
you're
just like, yes.
Yes.
Leave me until 8.
Totally. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. We're there with the two boys, but Inca still needs a bit of help. She did try with the milk, but it went everywhere. And
older two would help Max.
Yeah, the other two. Well, the thing is, they will, but she's like, get off. I want mummy to do it. So, yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Tom's mum always said that it's Tom and then there's 7 years and then Carrie. Tom's mum said if they'd have had Carrie first, there's no way they would have had Tom. Just different personality.
There you go. Yeah. I think if we'd had Inca as a second, I don't think we would have gone again, to be honest. Oh, dear me.
So obviously you've gone through loads of different stages now. You're now a whole new one. Starting to edge into, you know, teenage life.
Yes.
Does it feel weird looking back at those stages and kind of going, well, that felt like it was never ending, but it did pass. That felt like, which bit has been the toughest to navigate?
Oh, gosh. There are so many phases they go through.
Mm.
And yeah, I remember like the potty training phase. I just remember like constantly picking up poo and being like, come on, this is just not fun. Like in the car, you know what I mean? Like, mum, I'm just on a poo in the car. And you're like, why? We're driving to Bournemouth. Like, it's far. Like, and yeah, like, I don't know. There's so many. I just remind myself that everything is a phase.
Yeah.
And that helps me. And there were so many phases that we go through as parents, and that phase closes, but then a new phase opens.
Yeah.
But then I'd remind myself that it will pass. And like at the moment, my eldest is giving us a bit of back chat, bit of attitude, because he's at that age.
Well, it's the start of the hormones coming in.
It is the start of the hormones coming in. And I know it will pass.
Yeah.
I know it will. And he, you know, he kind of, and obviously I pick him up on it, and then he realises, and then he's like, sorry, mum. And I'm like, it's fine, you know, just be aware of it.
My favourite thing that I say right now is, oh, rephrase that.
Yes. Yes, that's nice. I'm gonna
mummy, milk.
Yeah.
Oh, rephrase that.
Yeah.
Can I have some milk, please, mummy? Oh, yes, of course you can, darling. Yeah.
What's the magic word?
just not the word.
No. Otherwise, I did say that to my youngest the day. She was like, mummy, like literally mummy milk. And I was like, what's the magic word? She went, now. I was like, wow. Really? And then I'm like, I haven't even taught you that. And the boys haven't taught you that.
That's amazing.
It's coming from, it must be coming from school or you know, things that she sees on Netflix or something.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, or maybe it's just her. I don't know. But I'm like, wow. Wow. Okay.
Let's talk about Mama Still Got It, your book. Because I've obviously read it and loved it, just as I love you
Thank
and everything
you.
That you put out.
Likewise.
It's got an amazing kind of structure to it because it follows the school year.
Yes, it does.
I love this.
Yeah, so you can pick it up and put it down literally month by month. So it starts in September, like the academic school year, and it goes through what we go through as parents throughout every month. And there's so much.
It's almost a nice reminder, actually, of what's to come.
What's to come, yes. And it's very lighthearted. It's funny. It's I wrote it thinking... genuinely thinking that people wouldn't read it. So I don't hold back. It's like a diary.
No, you don't. Like, have you had to check with the people that you talk about? Well, you moved. Who cares?
No, basically. Oh, no, I did ask my sister if I could talk about her story about calling the police because she watched some porn, which is hilarious. And if you don't know the story, then you're going to have to buy my book and read it. But... actually, no, I will say it because it's very, very funny. My sister was pregnant. She was heavily pregnant and she lived basically next door to me. And she came over really worried. She was like, I've done something and I'm really, really worried. And, you know, she's heavily pregnant. She's like, oh my God, what's wrong? What's wrong? She was like, this is really embarrassing, but I was really horny. So I started watching some porn. I was like, okay, fine. And she knew, but something happened and something popped up on her screen saying, FBI, you've broken the law. This is illegal. You owe us £300. And it's obviously a hacker.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, I didn't know what to do. So I phoned the police. And I was like, well, what did you say? And she spoke to this poor boy, this young policeman. And she basically called and went, he was like, what's the emergency? And she was like, I'm pregnant and I'm horny and I'm sorry. And the policeman was like, that's not a crime. And she was like, no, the FBI are asking for money. And he was like, we don't have the FBI in the UK. And it was so funny that, you know, and I have permission. I did have permission to write that story.
But that's the great thing. So you go through the school year and all the things that you face, but you have little anecdotes,
little anecdotes that kind of
go backwards to different times within your life.
Yeah. And they all kind of hook up and they all make sense why I've written it. But yeah, so there's a lot of stories that I've been through.
Yeah.
As I said, I didn't hold back. Like sometimes my editor was like, I don't think that happened. I was like, no, it did. Actually, she's like, okay, we'll leave it in. but it's very real and it's very lighthearted and it's very honest. And, you know, there are a few tear jerking moments in there and it is laugh out loud. And I've had some really lovely messages from people that have read it just saying like, I really needed to read this and thank you for making us feel normal in this journey. And I really did enjoy writing it.
When it comes to parenthood, I think there's so much focus on the baby. Mm. You know, I think that when we think about becoming parents, that is such a massive focus. And I think actually what you do so brilliantly in the book is that that is part of, you know, the book and the things that you say, but actually it's moving the conversation on to the school days,
yes,
which is a whole new thing that you don't, and everything that comes with that, the mother load, the never ending
WhatsApps,
all of that stuff, the politics that comes around having kids at school, you know. And I think you puncture so much humor within it, as you do with everything, you know. You put so much humor within it that it does, I would hope that someone listening to it or reading it, it kind of puts the ridiculousness into it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like we did when the kids were younger, having people online kind of sharing the ridiculousness makes you go, oh God, isn't this funny that they won't put their shoes on, all of that stuff. When that other the childish stuff happens when our kids are in school years, the stuff that happens to us, it's brilliant. It puts it into a perspective for us.
It does. And for me, laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah.
And I actually now I'm getting content from these rubbish situations, which, you know, which is great, really, because then it's, you know, relatable as well. Yeah. Like even when Jesse, my husband, does something ridiculous and then I'm silent and I'm looking at him and he looks at me and he goes, you're going to use that, aren't you? And I'm like, yes, I am. Well, thanks very much. So, and I do. And then what's lovely is sometimes when I make videos, sometimes I think before I press post, I'm like, is this just me? Like, will people get this?
Yeah.
And then the comments come in like, oh yeah, me too, thank God you've like put a light on this. I'm like, oh, thank God for that. So it's nice for me to know that I'm not alone in these things as well.
Yeah.
Yes, for me that's nice.
You talk in the book though about the mother load and about the juggle and about how, you know, you are someone who takes it all on. Mm. Have you got better, like, since sharing that? And I know that we all take on far more than we should, and we don't share out that load. Have you got better since sharing it?
Yeah, I have. I rarely ask for help.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I kind of always, and I always have done, kind of feel like I can do it by myself. I'm fine. I don't need help. Everything's fine. Even when I was a child, like, I never asked for help with, like, tie my shoelace.
Do you know who you are? Okay. You're Inca.
Oh, my God. I've made myself. Oh, my God.
You've made yourself, yeah. You've made a mini-me.
Okay, she'll turn out all right then.
Yeah, exactly. That's silver lining. Yeah. Just ride the wave.
Oh, my God. That was like therapy right there. Oh, my God. That's really hit me. Yes, yes. So I never, I've even forgotten what I was talking about now.
About doing it all.
Right.
Not wanting help.
Right. So
about
I never,
being Inca.
Right. So I never asked for help. But it got to a point where I think it was when I was writing the book and we were building the house and the kids and the work and, you know, the mental load that comes with everything as a mother. And I got to a point and I was just like, I can't do this. I can't do it all. And kind of broke down in front of Jesse. And he was like, of course you can't. Like, tell me what to do. And I would be like, but I don't want to tell you what to do. I want you to just know what to do. But then he's like, you know, I feel like his brain is wired so differently to mine. He doesn't, you know, I wake up in the morning and think, what are we going to have for dinner tonight for the kids?
Yeah.
Whereas he wakes up in the morning and goes, who knows? I'm going to go and do a poo. Like, I don't even know. It's, you know, and so as soon as I kind of opened up to him and said, I need more help, you know, he was like, just tell me what you need and I'll do it. And so I've had to learn to basically tell him what to do. I mean, I know, again, I don't want to tell him, but then, you know, if it's going to help, then I'll tell him.
But it's that thing. We can carry some sort of resentment towards the other person that they're not doing the things, but if they don't know what they're meant to be doing, and if we've just been doing it, we can't really hold it against them if we're suddenly like, get the uniform ready, and they're like, is it PE kit or formal?
Yeah.
You know what it is. It's been the same every Monday for the last 7 years.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, you're
just
right.
Just kind of...
Yeah. But I do find it's weird because when my mother-in-law comes over, and she's incredible, she is such a help, and I'm so grateful for her. When she comes over, I find myself kind of going in the passenger seat.
Mm.
And she will come in, she'll tidy up a bit, she'll help with homework, she'll cook. And she's done this. She comes over every Thursday for the last 11 years. She's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for her. And I do find that when she comes over, I will relax. And then the other day I was like, maybe Jesse's sitting in the passenger seat the whole time, because I'm the one that's kind of doing, you know, the mental load.
Yeah.
And so I kind of felt how I think Jesse might feel.
Mm.
And it was really nice.
Yeah.
It was really nice.
Also, I've referred to it as a mother load, and you referring it to the mental load makes me go, have we actually, because this conversation has been had over the years on Instagram and stuff, have we actually turned it into a thing that is the mother load when it is the mental load which can be shared?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. It definitely, it can be shared. And I think people that, my brother, for example, he had his first child 2 years ago.
Mm.
He's right in the thick of toddlers. It's hilarious. And he's like, is this normal? I'm like, yeah, it's normal. Anyway, so when he... Before their baby was born, him and his wife have said from day one, we're co-parents.
Yeah.
Like, we do everything 50-50. And it's working for them, whereas but it was different because when I had my children, you know, Jesse went back to work and I stayed at home.
Mm.
So therefore, it couldn't be 50-50.
Yeah.
But since COVID and working from home, him and his wife both work from home, so they can both do it. So it's very different. And I quite like that, you know. So their mental load is shared.
Yeah.
Whereas mine was never really, really shared because Jesse was work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I had to do it.
Yeah.
It was weird though, because I do weirdly like being busy as well. I feel like I work better when I'm busy.
Yeah.
And I am a very organised person.
Well, they say also, if you want something done, ask a busy person.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. Definitely. When I'm not busy, I'm useless. Absolutely useless. But when I am busy, I do get lots of stuff done.
Are you a list person?
Oh, yes. 100%. I love a list. I've lists everywhere and I love crossing it out. It feels so good.
It's not quite the same. If I don't have my notebook with me and I put a list on my phone, it's not quite the same when you just delete it.
No.
Because then that's not there.
No.
Do you know what I mean? That task is just gone.
No. I need to actually physically cross it out. I love it. Sometimes I write down what I've already done just so I can cross it out. Do you? Yeah. Love that. Love. Yes.
Louise, if you could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would you say?
Well, I've been waiting.
Is this where the notebook comes out? Okay.
Let me get my specs.
I think you're the first guest who has come in with a phone and two notebooks.
Right.
Yep.
Just so you know, these have never been anywhere apart from in the box under my bed. These are my diaries. I write diaries.
Yeah.
I always have done. This is 2004. I don't know where I need to show this to. This is 2004 and this is 2015.
Right.
Here I'm 24. Here, obviously with no children, and here I am pregnant with my second. And without me realising it, I've already written to my future self, which is now. And I scanned it yesterday, and I mean, honestly, I wrote so much.
I just seen the word tosser.
There's a lot worse in there. Can I swear?
Yes.
Fine, thank you.
I think I've been the one swearing on this episode, sorry. We've already got a knee on it.
So this is a letter to myself that I found. I was scanning this. Literally, that's a picture of us. 30th of May, 2004.
Very nice.
But in 2004, I went through a breakup. This guy broke my heart. Bastard. And this is, honestly, I've never done this before, so I might get a bit choked up because this literally is a letter to my future self. And it's June 2nd, 2004. A letter to my future self. Hello. I really hope you are well. I'm not so good at the moment. I don't think I'll ever find a nice and normal man. Do they even exist? Will I ever get married? Doubt it. Will I ever have kids? Not sure I want them, to be honest, but you never know. Will I ever stop thinking about prick face blank? I really hope my future self is happy and healthy. I want to love and to be loved. But who is going to love that fat girl who is too tall and talks like a man?
Oh.
Isn't that awful? That was before I started working on myself. Harsh, I know, but look what I have. Nothing.
Mm.
And then this is around the time where Natasha Bedingfield had her song. The rest is still unwritten. So I've put, life is unwritten. I have some hope. So, you know, I wrote this like not even, obviously not knowing what the future was going to hold.
20 years ago.
20 years ago.
How much life has changed.
Yeah. And I did stop thinking about that prick face. And, you know, I am obviously married, have kids, and I am happy and I am healthy. So that's the letter to myself in 2004. This one, very different. This is... honestly.
Do you still write these now?
Yeah, every day.
Every day.
It's the best. It's the best way to cut. It's like a time capsule.
Yeah.
It's. I really enjoy it as well.
Now, how do you fit it into your day? What do you start it or do you end it?
End of every day, I will write. I have all my diaries. Look at this. I was showing Izzy earlier. Like, these hearts represent when I had sex. When I was single. And with whom? Some of them I can't remember at all. It's terrible, isn't it? Anyway, yeah, so I have a diary, which is like everything.
Okay.
And I write, so when I go to bed, I write, I write how different this is. Okay, September 16th, 2015, which was my birthday. I was 35 years old and 40 weeks pregnant. This says, shit the bed, what the actual fuck? I am so over this pregnancy and Basil is being an awful threenager. And then in capitals, breathe. Dear future Louise, you will not miss this. Today I had to pick up Today I had to pick up shit, but I couldn't bend, so I used my toes. Oh my God. Right. I couldn't breathe. No, I couldn't bend, so I used my toes and handed myself the poo. I can't wait to lay on my front and have some peace and quiet. And then in capitals, give me a cocktail. And then it says, shit birthday. Looking forward to having a birthday where I can actually have a life. Where is my life? Where is this baby? I know, I'll feel better tomorrow, but ugh, just want some me time. And you know what? Again, looking back on that, I no longer pick up poo with my toes. I can lie on my front and I do have some me time. And I'm actually tonight going to write a letter to my future self. Yeah, because I think my sister and I were saying this the other day, what it's going to feel like when our kids leave home and go to uni or have their own apartment or whatever, like how it's going to be, how we're going to feel. So I said to my sister, when that day happens, I'm just going to go to Thailand to go back on the beach, which is where we were in our 20s, you know, around this time. So I'm going to write that tonight.
I absolutely loved that. Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's all right. Welcome. Honestly.
Yeah, have you never been worried that people will pick these up and read them?
I do worry. I do worry. I worry that I have a cleaner. I worry that she might rifle through it.
Right.
She may have done. Who knows? But
good entertainment if she does.
I mean, great entertainment. I mean, I actually sometimes, because I said I've got diaries that go, I've even got a 2008.
Am I going to be in today's one?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, you will be, actually. Like, yeah.
Just say nice
today
things.
Today I went on the Giovanna Fletcher's podcast. It was awesome. You were in my diary today. So sometimes if I, want to kick back in bed and just do a bit of reading, sometimes I actually read my diary.
Do you feel like it's a good way of getting it out?
Yeah. Yes. And the diary I wrote during COVID, 2020, that was a really good one because that was when I was just like, you know, I did feel like a lot of anxiety that year because of, well, we all did because we didn't know what the hell was going on. And it was quite nice to kind of get, it still is. It's like just, letting things out. Like if I've had a really rubbish day, I'll write it down. If one of my kids is being a knob, I'll write it down, you know. And then what's nice is that you look back on it and know that, that's okay now.
Yeah.
That's past. And I remember being really worried about it at the time and it's all fine. And I know that whatever's on my mind today, my concerns, whatever, I'll write it down. I'll look back on it, you know, next year, next month, whatever, and I know it'll be okay.
Yeah.
So it's nice to know that I know, because I've got it there, that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. No, I like that, though. I like that.
And there's so much I don't remember. There's so much in there. Like, even, like, 2 years ago, like, reading, like, what did I do this time 2 years ago? And I'm like, I can't remember that at all. Like, don't remember it. And it's lovely to remind myself. It literally is a time capsule.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it to anyone.
To be honest, reading yours is the first time that has made me go, I might actually like to do that. Did little books. Every time I was each pregnancy I've had a book that I've written to the baby.
Mm.
But it does make me go, I've got ones from like when I was 13, 14, talking about Tom.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, which is sweet. And letters that we sent to each other.
I think there's a book in that.
Yeah.
Out Valentine's Day.
There we go. Louise, we end the podcast with you completing three sentences.
Yes, I'm ready for that.
Bring
as
out
well.
The phone.
Bring out the phone.
You're so prepared.
Well,
you can cross
write a list.
Yeah. So the first one is being a mum means.
Right. I wrote this on the train here. Being a mum means having the incredible ability to locate a missing toy in less than it takes to have a brew, all while simultaneously pretending to be a detective, a magician, and a mind reader.
That is a lot. Since having children,
Before becoming a mum, I.
Oh, no, yeah, you use that.
Okay.
Change it.
Okay. Before becoming a mum, I was naive. I thought it meant the end of my life. I really did. I was like, oh, well, that's it then. Your life's over. I thought it would ruin everything, but I didn't realise how powerful I feel since becoming a mum. Building a human inside you, like literally eyeballs, fingerprints, fingernails, like all these like really intricate things are, you know, all the eggs in the ovaries that a girl gets. It's just insane. And I find it really miraculous. And I find that pregnancy is really, you know, understated because it's, you know, I always say like if men had uteruses, they'd be bragging about them down the pub because they are incredible. So I was also naive at how I thought I never realised how being a mum would actually really enhance my life.
Yeah.
No one tells you the incredible people you meet along the way. Mm. Like the friends I've met at the school gate or swimming or ballet classes and friends for life.
Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't think about. And I remember when, again, when my brother had his first baby, I think one of the things I said was, you have no idea who you're going to meet along the way. Mm. You've got mates for life out there that you haven't even met yet.
Yeah.
And I love that. And so I was naive thinking that it was going to be dull, and it's actually not.
Yeah.
Like being a mum has been, you know, one of the best things I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like your own mum, you would do it all again?
Yes, I would. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe not picking up pee with my with my feet.
I don't know. It's quite the image. And finally, I'm happy when?
Oh, I'm happy when all my kids are at home with me and we're on the sofa and we're watching telly and we're laughing and we're just all together.
Yeah.
Honestly, that makes me so happy. It makes me also so happy when they finish eating their food without complaining. Do you know what? Lots of things make me happy, actually. It's the small things in life.
Yeah.
But being around my kids and being outdoors with them, mm-hmm. I absolutely love. And that was my only wish this Mother's Day. I said, I just want to go for a walk and then go to the pub. But being with my kids really makes me happy.
Yeah. But there's something also, about when also, everyone's outside as well, isn't there?
Just being outdoors freedom. And just seeing them run and be kids.
Yeah.
And really enjoy it. And but then at the same time, you know, what makes me happy is also having some peace and quiet. You know, everyone loves a bit of peace and quiet.
And that's motherhood.
Yeah. So there's that as well. My husband makes me happy. You know, he's a good supportive guy. He's a good guy. He's definitely good for my first husband.
Kidding. We can make a few tweaks for the second. It's all fine. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely loved this chat.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.